facts of Mounts and Helens, more evidence for biblical reliability. I'll just move that because I'll trip on it. So what does Mounts and Helens have to do with the Bible? Hopefully tonight, by the time you leave tonight, you'll see why, what the relevance of it is. But where were you 25 years ago? If you're older than 25, where were you? Can you see? I don't know. I think it's quite bright, isn't it? Perhaps we can get rid of it. Yeah. Oh, that's better. I won't get a migraine there. So 25 years ago, where were you? What were you doing if you'd been born? Because today, 25 years ago today, in fact, this very day, 18th of May, and at 8:32 in the morning, and 17 seconds after 8:32, in fact, something happened. And we're going to have a look at that tonight. Mount St. Helens, where is Mount St. Helens? Well, it's in the United States, and it's in Washington State. It's not in Washington, D.C. As you'll know, Washington, D.C. is over here somewhere. But Washington State is up here, and Mount St. Helens is there. So it's a long, long way to fly, if you were to fly. And I was over there last year, last September, so I had an opportunity to have a look around. And some of the material here is taken from that visit. But Mount St. Helens, perhaps I preempted that there. If I go back to that one, you can see beautiful mountain. It's a volcano. It had been a silent volcano for about 100 years up until this point. And that area, as you can see, nice luscious area, trees, a good place to go camping, and many people did. You could do some skiing as well if you wanted to. A lot of people went fishing in Spirit Lake here. So a beautiful place for a long weekend for those Americans that lived in that area. But 25 years ago, something happened. And devastation happened, as you can see there. Total, you can't really see, can you? Totally annihilated. Looked like the moon after this event. That's what it looked like a couple of years after the event itself. So, like the moon. So, what's all the fuss about then? Well, the fuss is about Mount St. Helens. It's a volcano. A volcanic eruption happened, and we're going to have a look at that in a moment, bit by bit. But it's a volcano that's been studied in great detail by a lot of people because it happened 25 years ago, and so we're around, we can observe what went on, and we're going to see some of the slides about that. So it's a very studied volcano. And what's the fuss about all this for us today? Well, as you'll see, we'll look at some evidence, and the evidence has caused some problems in evolutionary thinking, or rather evolutionary thinking has had to be rethought on certain issues. For example, the Grand Canyon has been rethought how that actually formed because of evidence from here, and also Yellowstone Park, the way that has been formed has been rethought because of what happened at Mount St. Helens. But for us tonight, or for the normal man in the street, it has some big implications, in fact. As we can see there, there's a biblical approach or a naturalistic approach or an evolutionary approach. And really, it's whether what we read in our Bible is right or whether we read in these other texts, whether what this person brought forward, Charles Darwin or Richard Dawkins, what they propose is right. And that has implications on a number of things that we'll see tonight. Is what we read in the Bible right, or is what they're proposing right? Is a biblical approach correct, or is a naturalistic approach correct? And that's what we're going to have a look at. What's the next? Aha. Okay, so let's have a look at the biblical approach. What is the biblical approach then? If you've got your Bible, so you can turn to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, right at the beginning of the Bible. And before we actually read it, can anyone summarise? It's obviously the creation account, how God made the heavens and the earth, according to the Bible. We're going to take a straightforward reading of the Bible. And 7 days I've got listed there. I like to ask this question, actually. According to the Bible, How many days did it take God to create the heavens and the earth? Hands up, don't shout out. Or you can shout out. Six, that's right, yeah. Not seven, because God rested on the seventh day. 6 days to create the heavens and the earth. What happened on day one? Can anyone tell me? To just summarise it very briefly, if you would just have one sentence of what God did on day one, can you tell me? That's it. Let there be light. So God separated light from dark. Should we pick up a day by random? Day four. What happened on day four? Brilliant. Yes. God filled the heavens with sun, moon and stars. Day five? Fish and birds. Yes. Yeah. So God filled the sea and God filled the sky with birds. Day two? Heavens and the earth were separated, okay, and you're saying? Okay, the expanse, water was separated above the firmament and below, so separation there. Day three, did we miss day three out? What was day three? Green stuff, that's okay, dry land. Yeah, God caused dry land to be separated from the sea, so we've got dry land separated from the sea, and plants grew, and he made plants to, he filled the land with plants. We'll read just verses 1 and 2, just to get a flavour of what God did right back in the beginning. Because the biblical approach, if you're a Bible-believing Christian, and if you take a straightforward approach, then this is what we believe. So Genesis 1, the first few verses. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw the light was good. And he separated the light from darkness. God called the light day. And the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And so Genesis goes on, and we get my little caricatures of what happened on those days, as we've just discussed. So that's Genesis, the beginning of Genesis. And Genesis is a book of beginnings. It's a historical account of what happened. It tells us about this man and woman, Adam and Eve and their children. It tells us about, as you know, Abraham, or before Abraham. It tells us about Noah and what happened in Noah's day, about a flood. Do we take that literally? A worldwide flood. If you take a straightforward reading of Genesis, we do. It's a worldwide flood. Then we have, okay, after Noah, Abraham, then on to the others, Isaac, Jacob. So the biblical approach is to take that as a historical account. So that's the first thing about the biblical approach. Then the reason why we believe in God creating is because we see that there, right back in Genesis. Another reason why Bible-believing Christians might believe that we believe that God made this earth, and he made it not too long ago, because if you take Genesis and if you take all the details of the individuals, you can actually work back that it's not too long ago that Adam and Eve actually walked on this earth, perhaps 6,000, certainly no more than 10,000 years ago. So Bible believing Christians, if you take the Bible straightforwardly, the earth is certainly no more than 10,000 years old, and that is quite young. Is there another reason why we might believe that? Well, yes, there's Exodus. And there's somewhere in Exodus, it's Exodus 20, I'm sure you know that. It's the Ten Commandments. I've got them summarised here. Here's the Ten Commandments. Now, one of those Ten Commandments refers to creation. Who can tell me what that is? One of those Ten Commandments, I've summarised them here. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourselves any carved images. So on, so on, so on. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. There's one Sabbath day. Number four. If I just quickly read that, I'll just find it. Exodus chapter 20. verse 6. Remember the Sabbath day. This is what God tells us to do in the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day. We're in Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your maid, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your animals, nor your alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So another reason why the creationists take the Bible as saying that God made the earth and not too long ago, because there we have in Exodus something about creation, referring back to creation. This law that God has given us is based on creation. But we can shoot into the New Testament. There's just sort of three we're going to look at tonight of the biblical approach. Genesis, what's in Genesis? What's in Exodus to do with the law? And then Jesus's reference, well, to the Old Testament, but on here I've just got Jesus's references to Genesis and the respect Jesus has for Genesis. He treats it as some sort of authority, some sort of document that has authority. He takes it as true. He doesn't belittle it at all. And these are just the references here concerning, we've got Matthew 19, verse 1 to 10, where Jesus refers to marriage and divorce, and he goes back to Genesis, and at the beginning, Jesus says, what was going on in that particular passage was the Pharisees were trying to trip him up on an issue, but he referred them back to this authority, God's word, Genesis, and he accepted it as true. And we've got other passages as well. We can read about Abel, how he was a real individual in Luke 11:51. Matthew 24:37 about Noah and his flood. Jesus didn't belittle that at all. He accepted it, no problems. John 8:56 about Abraham, that he was a real person as well, not just a parable or a figment of someone's imagination to teach some good morals, but he was an actual person. Matthew 10:15 about Sodom and Gomorrah, again, real places. Luke 17:28 about Lot and his wife. Matthew 8:11, Isaac and Jacob. Jesus accepted these as real people. Genesis is a historical book. Jesus accepted that. And so the Bible-believing Christian, and most of us, if not all of us here, accept that position, really, that this is an historical document that we can trust. And from it, from a straightforward reading of it, we get the earth 6,000 years old, perhaps 10,000 years old, no more than that, certainly. And that's what we have in one hand, don't we? So that's the biblical approach. But then we have a naturalistic approach, which I suppose really started 200 odd years ago with Charles Darwin, and then the neo-Darwinist, Richard Dawkins. And the naturalist approach is to, well, assume that there is no God, and then let's have a look at nature around us, and what can we learn from nature? And I've got an example here of one approach by the naturalistic approach, rock formation. Remembering, we're thinking, is the earth old or young? And here we've got some rocks. I don't know if you can see that. Sorry, Peter. We've got three major regimes here, 1, 2, and 3. This particular regime in the middle has got lots of layering. And actually, you can conduct experiments or observations. The naturalistic approach is to observe sea floors and to see how quick deposition lay on the sea floors, because this is sedimentary rock, and so you can observe how long it takes for these layers to lay down. And you can actually look up in the scientific literature and you get all sorts of figures of how quick layers can be laid down. But I just pick one, and you can do the mathematics. Some sources say that it all depends where you go, actually, different observations, but you can get layers to be laid down at a rate of one millimetre per year. Now, this is 8 metres from here to here, 8 metres. How many years would it take for that to be laid down? 8 metres, and if it gets laid down layer by layer, 1 millimetre per year, how long does that take to lay down? Any good mathematicians here?
8,000 years.
Correct. So the naturalistic approach is, well, that, from our observations, takes 8,000 years to lay down. And you can use other examples and you can get other figures, but you're talking in thousands of years, hundreds of years, thousands of years. And that's just one chunk. And you've got other chunks of rock down here and other chunks of rock up there. And you've got to sort of ask, come on, creationists, look, it takes 8,000 years for that to lay down. And even then, you probably get 100 years or so between each layer because nothing happens during those sort of periods. So you're talking thousands of years. Come on, creationists. Our observation of our planet is that this doesn't hold up. So that's layers of rock. The next one is a valley formation, or as the Americans like to say, canyon formation. I don't know if you can see that. We've got a little stream in here, and we've got sort of like mountains and ridges here. And there's the valley. And if you did geography or geology at school, you sort of characterize a valley in three different types. There's a V-type valley, which is a young valley. There's a U-type valley, which is this one, which is a moderate aged valley. You're talking thousands to millions of years now. I'll come to that in a moment. And then a flat plain with a river going through it is what's known as a mature valley. And the thinking is, and you can do this experiment yourself, you know, you can go to these and you can monitor how fast grains of sand are moved by this river. So if you come to this, you see that this little river here has been moving sand and has eroded this valley over many years, and now you're talking thousands to millions of years to get this sort of erosion. So you've got that on top of rocks being laid. So first of all, you get rocks laid down, probably some sea was over it, you get rocks laid, and then you've got a valley formed after that by a river going through it. You're talking millions of years now. So then you're saying, well, come on, creationists, you cannot believe your Bible, surely. Observations, evidence. Are you Christians not? Don't you believe in evidence? But if you talk to geologists, they don't like that sort of evidence all that much, to be honest, because it is a little bit relative. You can't get it down that precisely. And so a lot of people look at what's known as absolute dating of rocks, and radiometric dating, as it's called. What that is, you get a rock. I should have brought a rock in, shouldn't I? And inside the rock, you've got all sorts of minerals, potassium, this particular dating, potassium. Over time, it decays to argon, a gas. That leaks out the rock, or rather, it doesn't. If the rock's molten, the gas will leak out. But once it solidifies, and as this takes time to decay from potassium to argon, it takes in that order of 1.3 billion years to do that. I don't have a problem with that figure, that's okay. And so, because the rock has solidified, that gas then accumulates in the rock. Before it's solidified, it escapes, but as soon as it's solidified, it gets trapped. Once you know that's trapped, you can look at it, measure it, and then you can work out how old the rock is. And that's where we get our billions of years from. Well, that's where some geologists get their billions of years from. And we're now talking, or rather the oldest rocks allegedly have been dated at 4.6 billion years. So, the two approaches. I'll leave it just there as a cliffhanger for the time being. The biblical approach, do we take that literally? Or the evolutionary approach, the naturalistic approach, where we're observing evidence And it's talking billions of years. It's not talking thousands of years. So what? Mount St. Helens. And this is really where Mount St. Helens comes into this. 25 years ago, it erupted. So I'm just going to talk a few minutes really about what happened at Mount St. Helens. A little bit of what went on. This particular picture here was taken about 3 months before the big eruption. So up until the 18th of May, there were some little earthquakes and some little plumes being formed. So there was warning that this earthquake, this volcano was going to erupt, steam eruptions and some ash eruptions. And also, during those 3 months, a big bulge started to bulge out the northern side of the volcano. So obviously, material was being pumped into that mountain, into that volcano, but wasn't coming out of the top. The bulge started to come out. I've got some figures here of how much it started to bulge. I can't find them. But on the final day, final few days, it started to bulge out by 50 feet per day. So there's a lot of material was being put into that mountain. And that's the magma underneath. This is a picture just what it looked like a few days before. That's a similar picture to what you've just seen. And then on the day itself, it was a Sunday morning. And this photo is actually taken from an aeroplane that flew over at exactly the time that the thing erupted. Fortunately, they'd flew past where the crater was going to be formed, and so obviously their lives were saved. But you probably can't really see the detail of that, but what's happened, 18th of May, 8:32 and 17 seconds, a 5.3 Richter scale earthquake happened at the base of the volcano. That's where it was measured. And that caused an avalanche. You can see an avalanche of material there. Notice there's no steam or ash coming out at this point. So it started a little avalanche. And that avalanche got a little worse. A lot more material slid down the northern side of the volcano. And what had actually happened was, over those 3 months, a lot of the magma, a lot of the ash had started to enter the top of the volcano. But the volcano itself had been plugged, so there'd been a plug at the top that stopped the material coming out. So when there was this earthquake, 5.3 Richter scale earthquake, that released this bung, or this stopper, at the top of this volcano, much like if you have a pop bottle and you shook it up, it won't explode, until it won't come out until you unscrew the top slightly, and then it would all explode off, or your champagne bottle. That's effectively what happened. The stopper slipped down. It slipped down the north face, which is unusual. Usually volcanoes go straight up, but this was going to project out northwards. Remember, this volcano is a small to medium-sized volcano, and as the side slid down, that slid down into Spirit Lake, which is just behind that ridge there, and did certain damage. So if you were standing over there, you would want to try and miss that landslide of material, but that wasn't the start of your troubles. If you were standing here, after the landslide came this pyroclastic flow, as it's called, which is hot water, steam and ash, that blasted out northwards. That's that first picture there. Then you can see it developing with this picture. And you can see it developing. Ah, now we are standing there. It's coming towards you. This gentleman, Mr. Ron Holm, was taking these photos, and you can see it's coming towards him. Not too much of a problem yet. He was about 10 miles away, actually, from the volcano. And at this point, he decided that he thinks he better get out of there, because you can see that this material, it's actually travelling at, get the figures right, it's travelling at 200 miles an hour. So you're going to have a fast car if you're going to get out of there quick. Not only that, this material, it's ash, yes, it's hot steam. It's actually 300 degrees Celsius, 550, 560 Fahrenheit if you speak American. It's hot. And, of course, if you survive the landslide, you've got this pyroclastic flow that you were supposed to survive. Here's just a quick photo that just shows how it blasted a tree trunk. Other trees had their leaves and everything stripped from them. But a lot, 150 square miles, the trees were actually smashed to the ground, as you can see in this photo here, the like little sticks. So this blast came out, 150 square mile area, just flattened the trees completely. 57 people were in that area, and they died, close on vaporized, 300 degrees Celsius. Okay, so that wasn't... Okay, we've got the landslide, we've got the pyroclastic flow, but that wasn't the least of your problems. You then had mudslides, mud flows coming, because there was a lot of water trapped in the rocks and in the area immediately on the mountain itself. And that mixed with the ash, mixed with the rocks, and that flowed downstream. And this was a logging camp. These are lorries that have just been decimated. And that particular mud flow on that day was 30 feet deep. So a mud flow 30 feet deep came. I don't know what sort of speed it came, but then it left 15 feet of deposits. So there was the mud flow, but then what happened then is that the volcano then just continued to produce a plume of ash for 9 hours afterwards. And the amount of energy, and this is a small to medium-sized volcano, the amount of energy involved with that was quite amazing. 400 million tons of TNT total for those 9 hours that this was being produced. That is 30,000 atomic bombs going off. And again, if you do the maths on that, 9 hours, it actually works out at one atomic bomb going off every second. So the amount of energy in that little to medium-sized volcano is amazing. And this is me as a physicist. I come and this interests me. This does. Energy is what I'm interested in. Okay, so all that ash has been pumped up into the air. And you can see the effects of the ash here on the ground. This was actually within that 150-mile area. There were two people in there that died in that van. But you can see the sort of layers of ash that were laid down there. Just a little picture of some distance away as people watched. These are south of the volcano, so they're nice and safe as they watch it erupt. And a half of a cubic mile of material of the mountain was just stripped away. The mountain itself was close on 10,000 feet high and has been reduced to 7,000 feet. A lot of material had been projected northwards. Just a little bit of the devastation. This was Spirit Lake. That landslide, what happened right initially, that landslide came into the lake, caused a tsunami, a wave that went onto the far bank, stripped that bank, which was covered in trees, of those logs, and then pulled those logs into the lake itself. And that's the result of that. There's over a million logs in that lake today. And that's interesting because the main creationist geologist that studies this, Steve Austin, he did his PhD on how coal is formed, and he proposed a theory that you get a log mat, and with all this moving, this moves around with the wind, you get them abrasing against each other, and then particles of the logs drop to the bottom, form sediments on the bottom, and over time he proposes that forms coal. That was his proposition. But no one believed that log mats formed, and he proposed this a few years before Mount St. Helens. And then when he saw this was it. This is proving his PhD thesis. So that's an interesting mechanism for the formation of coal, which is contrary to what others would believe. Okay, so that was the day itself, 18th of May. This picture is actually a few years later. I've got the date here. Mud flow, 19th of March, 1982. That's a mud flow, actually. It's not magma, because this type of volcano doesn't produce a lot of lava, I should call it. It produces a lot of ash and plumes that come out, and that heats the snow. This is snow you can see here. Melts the snow, gets the rock and the deposits, forms mud, and then comes down the mountain and causes devastation, actually. A lot of devastation, these mud flows. Okay, so this is down in the valley below Mount St. Helens, still north of Mount St. Helens. Lots of deposits, lots of gullies and valleys formed. Another picture of that. Okay, so this is the day itself, the day after 18th of May. It's like a lunar landscape. Okay, just a few slides there. Another point just to make is that Mount St. Helens likes to form domes, and that's a dome that's formed in the centre. It's a plug that holds down the material. So this just grows over time. So this is fresh rock that's being formed in the centre of Mount St. Helens. And this, that occasionally, every few years or so, this thing would then be blown out, and then ash would come out as smoke, and then it would stop for a while, and then it would plug up again. And that went on and on and on for a number of years. And I've just got a table here. You don't have to take the detail of this table. From 18th of May 1980 through to 21st of October 1986, it did that, plugged up, and then blew the plug out, formed the ash cloud, the plume, and then plugged up again. So over that period of 6 years or so, 7 years, you would have an explosive event, you would have plumes being formed, this ash coming out, pyroclastic flows would come down, mud flows, and dome building again. Okay, so I've just really gone through quickly a few of those slides of what happened on the day itself and subsequently to the day. And what's significant about Mount St. Helens is that it's a mountain, a volcano that's been studied by a lot of people, monitored in all sorts of ways to see what the effect is of all these different processes that go on there. I had the opportunity to go in September, and if you notice here, I'll go back to this slide, it went silent. 21st of October 1986, it went silent, and it didn't do any activity until I got there. It's my fault. So I got there, and I met up with this guy here, Lloyd Anderton, or Ander? I always get his name wrong. Let me get his name right. Because he did the first article in the Evangelical Times on this, Lloyd Anderson. So I had an opportunity to meet up with him, and because he's the curator of the Creation Museum there, and he highlights a number of features that point to a young Earth and not an old Earth. So I had an opportunity to meet up with him, and he showed me around everything, so it was really quite a good opportunity. So I said to him, would he write an article for me about what the museum's about and everything? So he agreed to that. And that's where these articles in Evangelical Times came from. If you don't get the Evangelical Times, not a problem. I've got 30 down here, so if you would like to take one, totally free, that's up to you. You can take one. If you get ET, if you want some others, please just take some extra copies. It's not a problem. So we put these articles together because they show something really interesting. I don't know if you can see that picture that well. It's in ET. There are three pictures in particular that are in ET in the centre that my article focuses on. This is the first one, and I don't know if that jogs a memory. Right back at the beginning, we saw that about the three major regimes, and then we've got this middle stratification on there. And in there we've got, in ET, we put this in there and we said, how long did it take to deposit the 8 metres of stratification in the centre of this picture? 60 million years? 390,000 million years? 5,000 years? Or 3 hours? And Peter kindly said he worked out that it was 8,000 years to get that sort of deposits a few moments ago. And of course it took 3 hours. It took 3 hours on one particular day to form that deposit. So that's the first photo. Then the next one is, well, what about this valley? This valley, how long did it take to erode the canyon as pictured, this valley as pictured? 2 million years, 100,000 years, 2,000 years, or one day? And it took one day for that to occur. The issue is, if you're a geologist, let's say you're 24 years old, and you came to these sites, you would think that this might have taken 10,000 years to form, because you weren't there 25 years ago. Where's it gone? Well, going back to this one, if you were 24 years old and you didn't know anything about Mount St. Helens and what happened, you would perhaps come out with your 8,000 years or your 5,000 years for just that to be laid down. Okay, what about this one? This is another photo that we have in ET. How old has the lava dome pictured? That's the lava dome in the centre of Mount St. Helens. How old has this lava dome been dated using the absolute dating techniques, these radiological techniques? So this has been done. So it's a good test to test out how good these absolute dating techniques are. 2.8 million years, 340,000 years, 2,000 years, or 10 years. And of course the thing is 10 years old. When the rock was sampled, it was actually 13 years old, to be precise. It was taken to the labs and dated, and you never guess what the dates came out to be. Depending on what particular crystal you look at, the oldest it came out to be was 2.8 million years. The youngest crystal came out to 340,000 years. So that really just demonstrates that these absolute dating techniques, there's something wrong with them. They need looking at. You can't just take them as they are. They're not absolute, basically. And that's the beauty of Mount St. Helens, and that's what intrigued me when I went over there in September. And that's why I was really concerned, just to get something in ET, really, in Evangelical Times, about Mount St. Helens. It's 25 years ago today since it erupted. And the beauty of it, as I said, keep repeating, is that it's been observed by many people. We were there, we could observe what was going on, and we have to revisit, or the naturalistic person has to revisit their thinking on these various issues. The articles that have been put together, there are five articles there. So the curator of the museum, Lloyd, put the first one together, so he's just got a testimony of why he set up the museum. And he set up the museum just to demonstrate seven reasons that Mount St. Helens actually gives for believing in a young Earth. And he cites them. He has a mountain rearranged beyond recognition in 9 hours, where you might have expected many years for that to happen. Canyons formed in 5 months. The canyon that I showed took just one day to form. That was through sedimentary rock. There were other canyons actually gorged out through igneous rock that actually took 5 days to 5 months to occur. We've got other badlands formed in 5 days. Layered strata formed in 3 hours, as we looked at. River systems formed in 9 hours. Sunken forests formed in 10 years. Don't know what that is. Fast formation of coal beds, precursors. Another way of thinking about how coal could be formed in a matter of years instead of millions of years. So he highlights those in the article. And then just wanted to get some other people, wanted to get Steve Austin himself, who's the main geologist, creation geologist, who's looked at Mount St. Helens to look to write an article, but he's a very busy man and I couldn't get him. But Andrew Snelling graciously said that he would do that. He knew he was the second choice, but he still got on and put that article together. He's a geologist, so he writes from a geologist point of view. I've got a chemist to write from a chemist point of view. That's Monty White, if you know him, a British man. And the biologist, Philip Bell, comments on the recovery of that region, because the region is really recovering fast from that decimation, from that destruction, which has surprised a lot of people. And then I just concluded as a physicist, talking about the energy involved, because as a physicist, that's where it comes down to. It's energy. If you've got a lot of energy, if you've got a process that, if you've got a high power process, it can take a short amount of time to form these features. That if you come and assume there's a low power process, then it takes a long amount of time to form. It's a matter of energy, power times time. Sorry to be mathematical again. So the articles really conclude with this statement: creationists accept a straightforward reading of the Genesis account of creation, as in our Bible. But many Christians worry that this is no longer intellectually credible. This is something that concerns me, is that when I turn on my television, when you look at the material that is taught our children at school, the naturalistic approach, more specifically the evolutionary approach, is adopted. And people like Richard Dawkins and others, Charles Darwin, are put forward as fact, whereas that they're certainly not. And Mounts and Helens, even though these are biologists, they're not geologists, but Mounts and Helens, however, the evidence from Mounts and Helens show that any such worries are not founded in science. When we're actually there, when we actually observe these processes happening, we find that they happen very much more quicker than what we might speculate if we come and speculate that these rocks were formed millions of years ago. When we observe, there are high power processes going on in volcanic activity, and you can get the features from these on our planet, which you might think takes a long time to form. If we believe the Bible, then a flood occurred, and that flood is catastrophic. And I certainly believe that that the features that we observe on our planet with the fossils laid down and the various rocks laid down can be better explained from a catastrophic event such as a flood than from rather a gradual long time process of these things occurring. So the three main sort of issues are here. Geological features we observe on Earth don't need long time scales to actually form, and we observe that at Mount St. Helens, and that's why that has been an important volcano, because we observe stratified deposits in 3 hours, valleys formed in 1 day. Absolute dating techniques are not, they're not absolute dating techniques. And sort of in conclusion, here's a human with their thinking process, and their thoughts come out of their head through this tap. If you take a naturalistic viewpoint or an evolution point of view and you look at the evidence, then you may get billions of years. You need billions of years. Or rather, the issue is this, actually: life. Where did life come from? That is the real issue. Was it created, or did it come from nothing? If it came from nothing, you're going to need a long time to get incremental changes from nothing to something. Well, in my thinking, actually, that's totally illogical, to be honest. You can't have nothing to even a simple cell. But if you start with a simple cell and then evolve up, you're going to need a long time. And so I think naturalistic geologists are forced to accept the billions of years to produce life. And, of course, this is the implication, I think, for people today, is that, well, it's an accident. You're an accident. and there's no purpose. Whereas a biblical viewpoint, and if you look at the same evidence, then you can understand that there's a young earth, it's not an old earth. If you take catastrophic processes, such as the flood, then you can get the same sort of effects in a geological sense. But we believe that life was put on this planet by God, is planned and has a purpose. And I think this is the final slide, which just reiterates what I said earlier, really. We're just really talking about geology tonight rather than biology. Geological features we observe on Earth don't need long time scales to form. Mount St. Helens demonstrates that. And really, the ET article, I wanted people to take away those 3 points: stratified deposits in 3 hours, valley formation in 1 day, absolute dating doesn't actually work, and that's it, really. If you want some general information, there's a website there for general information, www.answersingenesis.org. Or more technical information is this one here, www.icr.org, Institute of Creation Research. So I just really wanted to summarise the articles that have been put together in ET. So that was the plan tonight. And really just to ram home to you those 3 points. It's not necessary to believe in billions of years. A straightforward reading, a account of the Bible is intellectually credible. I'm a scientist myself. I believe in evidence. I like to see evidence. And Mount St. Helens is evidence that these processes happen very quickly, that you don't need billions of years.